Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and I am bringing you the only podcast that's live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via the capital city of Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. How are you all doing this evening, or this afternoon, or this morning, whenever you're listening to episode 70? I am recording it. I'm recording the intro to this particular installment on Monday evening, ladies and gentlemen. So, before we get into talking a little bit about my guest for this episode, I want to talk about a couple of other things that have been going on here. As I mentioned, it is Monday evening, and news has broke that the Nature Boy Buddy Landell, a wrestling legend of the 1980s, has passed away at the age of 53. Not much is known about it. And, you know, I gotta be honest, Nature Boy Buddy Landell is one of those guys as a kid that I really was not really interested in. It wasn't till later when I became, a teenager and an adult wrestling fan, I guess you could say, when I started wondering, whatever happened to the dude? Because I remember he was all over, the Mid-Atlantic area and the Crockett's television for a while, and then gone. And just weirdly enough, about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I listened to the Art of Wrestling, Colt Cabana's podcast, which, hey, you know what? It's a great podcast. So I'm going to mention it on my own podcast. But anyways, a few weeks ago, I was catching up on some past episodes. He did an episode with Buddy Landell. Definitely give it a listen. I think it's number 238 or 239, somewhere in there, but just search for it, because it was really interesting. Buddy Landell, very open and honest on that edition of The Art of Wrestling, and answered a lot of the questions that, as a fan, for years, I've wondered, you know, about his career and whatnot. Something else I want to talk about, and I know I just briefly talked about it on my last mini edition, or momentary edition, of this podcast, was the death of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And I got an email from a listener who said, why didn't you talk a lot about the death and the passing of Dusty Rhodes? You know what? I kind of didn't really want to talk a lot about it, only because so many of those tributes had been pumped out that week, and everybody was talking about it. And I mean, I don't know what much to say. I was never lucky enough to ever have an interaction with the Dream. I know several individuals in the wrestling industry here in Ohio have had the opportunity to interact with him. I'll do it right now, I guess. I didn't mean to be disrespectful and just not talk about it. I just thought that, everybody had known about his passing, and therefore would just talk about it and move on. But, I'll give my 2 cents worth. You know, as a kid growing up, I really was not that big of a Hulk Hogan fan, but Dusty Rhodes was certainly the guy that I wanted to watch wrestle more so than Hulk Hogan. The guy could wrestle beyond what you thought he could wrestle. You know, again, I think it's very well known that he wasn't 6'8", 310 pounds. He wasn't chiseled, wasn't jacked, but still that dude could work, man. And always entertaining, always enjoyed watching Dusty Rhodes as a kid, and as an adult, he's a legend. What can you say? Who's got a bad thing to say about Dusty Rhodes or his body of work? Anyways, ultimately I think that, the wrestling world is going to obviously not be the same without him, or even Buddy Landell, because, even though he wasn't in the wrestling industry right now in 2015, he's part of the heritage of it. Every person that puts on a pair of tights and laces up a pair of boots and gets into a ring is another part of wrestling history. Whether it's a small part, a large part, a medium-sized part, a well-known part, an obscure part, you're still part of it. And lastly, talking about professional wrestling or professional sports in general, I have to say, and I'm just going to talk about it here real quick. I had an experience last week that I really have never had before. Actually, I'm sorry, I take that back. It wasn't last week, it was the week before. So I'm a huge hockey fan, as everybody knows that listens to this podcast, and I play rec league hockey. Now listen, I have no delusions of grandeur. I don't go out there thinking that I'm going to win the Stanley Cup. I just go out there to play, get a little exercise, have a little fun. I have a great, great team with a bunch of guys that have the same, I guess you could say, mindset as I do. Just go out there, have fun, and whatever. We don't take it too seriously. But on Monday, June 8th, I got a concussion while playing rec league hockey. Yeah, and I would love to sit on here and say it was some horrendous hit, but it wasn't. First of all, you're not allowed to check people in rec league hockey. But anyways, I just kind of lost an edge, fell, and a guy from the opposing team accidentally fell on top of me, and his knee drove, his knee got driven into my head. And man, I saw stars. And then I went to the bench, and I was sitting on the bench for a couple of shifts, and I felt better, man. I played the rest of the game and played quite well. But driving home, I started to get a headache, and I was like, oh, this is not good. And the next morning, Tuesday, I woke up and just didn't feel right. Had some cloudiness and whatnot. Went to the doctors later that morning, and they said, yeah, you have a very, very, very mild concussion. So that Tuesday, I pretty much just slept and did nothing. Because they tell you not to do anything. Like, try to minimize your use of your phone or the computer. Try not to watch TV. Try not to read. Try. Oh, my God, it was so boring. Just to lay around and do nothing. It was, maddening. But by Wednesday morning, feeling really good. Back to my old self again. I took a week off from hockey last week so I wouldn't get re-injured. And I just got to say, I hope I never get another concussion because that was not fun. But, alright, enough about all that miscellaneous junk, man. I got it all out of the way. Let's talk about episode 70. It is going to be an episode that's going to feature heavily on film. Another one of my hobbies, movies. We all love them. It's summertime. It's when Hollywood cranks out all the blockbusters. Which, you know, I guess now starts at the beginning of May. But anyways, Paul Markoff is joining me as my guest on this episode of the PVD Cast. Now, Paul is the host or co-host, I guess you could say, of Now Playing, which is a film review program that airs on WOCC-TV3. Now, for those of you that have no idea what that channel is, especially in the Central Ohio area, if you go to your cable guide and try to look at it, it is Otterbein University's television station. And I'm not so sure as to the availability of that channel on many of the cable lineups. I know in Westerville proper, where I live, where Casa de la Orlando is, I do get it. But I'm not so sure that some folks over maybe in Gahanna get it, or people in Worthington or downtown, I'm pretty sure don't get it. But nonetheless, the program has been on for a very long time. Paul and Mark are the two hosts, and they sit down and talk about movies. And so he happens to be a friend of Adam Michaels, and while talking in passing, Adam's mentioned something to Paul, and he said that he would love to come on the podcast. So he is coming on. We're going to talk quite a bit about movies. And with that being said, let's not wait any longer. Let's jump right into it. I'm going to throw it to a break, ladies and gentlemen, and when I come out of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Paul Markoff. You've heard him on this podcast, but now Brian Lau's science fiction fantasy comic book, Staunch Ambition, is available for sale. If you want to get your hands on the preview issue that we talked about on episode 68 of this very podcast, head on over to staunchambition.com. You can pick up the preview issue as well as a ton of other swag. Just head on over to staunchambition.com and check out the online store. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Markoff joining me here. Paul, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Good? You ready to talk some movies?
Always ready to talk movies.
Excellent. Excellent. So what have you seen so far? It's the big summer season for movies. I will confess, as I said to you off air, I haven't been to the theater much, which makes me sad a little bit because I enjoy movies, but just personal schedules and whatnot, haven't had a chance. So what have you seen that you really, really liked?
Actually, just last night, I went and saw the sneak preview with the wife and kids of Inside Out, the new Pixar film. And it's probably the best Pixar movie I've seen since Up, which is really? Actually one of my favorite movies, Up. But Inside Out, it is reaching for a realm that I don't think most children's films have ever gone for.
Because of the content of the like the different emotions, and the, you explained it's kind of a little more cerebral.
Yeah, very cerebral for a kid's film. Probably the most ambitious film that I've seen.
Even though
I've
totally mispronounced that. Cerebral. Yes, anyways.
Yeah. I mean, basically, they're, you know, you're going inside the head of an 11-year-old girl and you know, kind of dissecting the various emotions that she experiences.
Okay.
From joy to anger,
okay,
to sadness, disgust, okay, fear. Those are the main... the main characters in the film.
And the plot point is she moves from Minnesota down to California, right?
Yeah, she's okay. a single kid, okay, with both her parents married. They move, okay, from Minnesota to San Francisco, and it's about the struggle moving there and you know, adjusting to a new school, new friends, you know, all that that goes along.
Even climate, to be honest, because, I mean, Minnesota, I assume it was the stereotypical snowy, cold Minnesota, sunny, warm,
yeah,
California.
Yeah, actually, she's a little league hockey player.
Oh, okay.
So,
excellent.
You know, that plays into the awesome plot and her struggles, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So, overall, really good then?
Yeah, I thought it was outstanding. Okay. It's funny throughout.
Okay.
Certainly, there are some emotional moments in the early stages of the film, and then, of course, later in the film. And it's really pretty clever how they manipulate the emotions into characters and how that all ties in and really plays out, you know, very... very emotionally in the end.
Okay. Who stars in that? Do you know off the top of your head?
Amy Poehler is kind of the lead, okay, actress as, okay, as Joy. Well, lead actress. She's the lead voice talent,
yeah,
as Joy.
Okay.
So she's from Parks and Recreation,
right,
and,
yep,
and,
yep,
SNL and,
uh-huh,
all that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So overall, that was a good one. What was what was the other film that you saw that you liked so
my
far?
Two favorites of the summer so far, Inside Out, and then I saw Jurassic World. I think 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
Okay.
And yeah, I thought it really delivered. I know it's kind of been received kind of mixed reaction critically. I'm assuming the people, because it had the biggest opening ever at the box office.
Yeah.
The biggest opening weekend ever.
And I think it's even, is that worldwide or just domestic that was open?
I think it's both.
Both, isn't it?
Domestically.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought I heard both, that it was not only domestic largest opening ever, but
yeah,
worldwide.
It broke the initial Avengers record, okay, for the highest domestic gross opener, and I think you're right. It grossed over $500 million,
yeah,
worldwide in the weekend, and to me, it delivers what you'd expect from the Jurassic series. It's certainly better than The Lost World and Jurassic Park 3, which I actually enjoy The Lost World. I gave it a pass on our show Now Playing. I give it a B-.
Okay.
3, to be honest, I can't remember much about it.
I never saw 3.
Yeah, you're not missing
anything. I was like, after 2, I was like, yeah, I know, I'm not seeing 3.
Yeah, it was basically a car chase for dinosaurs. Just watch the dinosaurs chase people around for about an hour and a half. But,
Okay.
It was all right.
Yeah, well...
But this one's pretty close in mimicking at least what the original tried to do.
Oh, good, good. Okay, excellent, excellent.
So, essentially, Jurassic Park, the original, of course, they go to the park and they're kind of test subjects to see if something like this will work out. And you just have the, you know, Laura Dern and Sam Neill's characters, the archaeologists, and then Malcolm, played by Jeff Goldblum, who are going in to see, you know, is this going to work? Will this work for a park?
Right.
Jurassic World, the park's open. I think that might actually be the slogan for the film.
Okay.
Where
okay.
there's 20,000 people there to experience an amusement park.
That was going to be my question, because I have yet to see it, but was it kind of, like, where did it pick up from Jurassic Park and, like, the other films and that, or is it a complete reboot that they're just starting all over again?
No, it essentially, like many people did, it forgot the second and third films. This forgets the second and third films.
Okay.
So there's a lot of acknowledgement of the original Jurassic Park.
Okay.
The character of John Anderson, played by Richard Attenborough, who's
okay.
no longer alive.
Right.
He was the park owner there. They acknowledge the existence of the original Jurassic
okay,
Park,
cool,
and there are
cool.
a lot of cool things throughout the picture
okay.
that acknowledge the original.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, did you go see Avengers Age of Ultron?
I did.
Okay. I mean, because that's technically a summer movie. I mean, it kicked
off
Memorial
yeah.
Day. I mean, that was the big one.
Yeah, so. Actually, I think it was a couple weeks before.
Was it? The summer season starts whenever they want it to. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, summer movie season starts whenever whenever the Avengers wants to come out. That's Age of Ultron. I thought it was okay. I'd give it a C plus. I was kind of underwhelmed by it, to be honest.
I liked it. Being the big comic book geek that I am, I liked it, but I thought the first one was better. I thought too many of the side stories that they were trying to tell took away from the main plot. Like the Hawkeye, I have the farm that no one knows about, and I'm a family man. That kind of, I was like, eh. Yeah, okay.
It's more of like an escape. It's a sanctuary for the Avengers where they can get away and hide.
Right, and Thor's thing where he disappears for a while and goes and takes that weird spa and bath thingy. And you know, just to set up Thanos at the end was a little clunky. I didn't like how that worked. But I liked it. I just didn't think it was as good as, you know, as the first one. I thought the first one was rock solid, to be honest.
I'm kind of C plus on the Avengers films. I guess my gripe is with the pictures. Not that I think that they're bad. I think they're kind of underwhelming, at least in their action pieces, where it's kind of just one flowing action scene where there's no real build up or tension. I don't feel to it.
Okay.
Because typically it's kind of like mayhem's constantly ensuing.
Okay.
Where there's no setup. You know, action and then conclusion. So I don't really feel the intensity of the moment, I guess. I mean, it looks cool, and I can comprehend it, which I can't say about some of these other big blockbuster films, the Transformer films, where I can't even tell what the heck's going on.
Oh.
So I appreciate that, and I think where you're coming from, as kind of a comic book fan, is you get to see, it's like an all-star game of comic book
heroes. Oh, no, it is. Yeah, it is. And I think that they've done, I think Marvel does a very good job with their film, not so much with their TV series.
Okay, and I haven't watched any of
I think DC is the other way around, just as a side note. I think DC does a very good job in recent years with their television product, but their movies are not very good. I mean, Green Lantern was terrible. I'm sorry. I
think we actually. I don't think I actually saw it. That's the one. That's the Ryan Reynolds one.
Yeah. And Blake Lively.
We passed on it.
It was rough. It was rough. I think. And I'll just come right out and say it. They tried to do too much. I think that with the Avengers, they keep things simple. Captain America, they kept things simple. It's a simple plot. I think Green Lantern, they tried to, let's do everything. Let's do 50 years of comic book history. Jam it all into one movie. You can't, because then it just becomes a muddled mess. And that was my gripe. So I think Marvel does a very good job with their theatrical releases, their films, not so much with their TV. I'm still not a fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I have many friends that continue to try to get me to jump back on that bandwagon, but I'm sorry. No. So, but we're kind of getting off topic there, because that's not really movies and whatnot. So is there anything else that is coming out that you're excited for?
I am looking, speaking of Marvel and speaking of comic books, I guess because it's a little different, a little offbeat, and the director that's involved has done some stuff that's a little off the beaten path, at least within the genre. Peyton Reed is directing Ant-Man.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to Ant-Man because it looks different than your standard comic book film.
Right, and I think that, do you think that they decided to go that avenue because of how good and how well-received Guardians of the Galaxy was?
I certainly think that plays into it. I was one of the people when I first saw Guardians of the Galaxy and I saw the release date, I was not excited about it at all. I thought it looked like dumping grounds.
Same here. I'm the comic book geek and I was like, I vaguely remember that comic book. Because it did not last long.
It looked like they were just basically trying to capitalize on all the other films were out. I really liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
It was.
To be honest, I think it's one of the better comic book movies that's come out in recent years. And I'm hoping that they're able to do that with Ant-Man because it looks silly. It looks goofy.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be playful. And you know, I think you have to be. I mean, it's called Ant-Man.
Exactly. He's not the most intimidating superhero out there.
No.
What has Peyton Reed done? The name rings a bell, but I can't remember.
One that I'd highly recommend, and the other one didn't quite cut it, but I guess I liked what he was trying to do. He directed Bring It On, which had its own little, you know, flavor to it. As far as a teen, you know,
guilty pleasure.
Film.
I won't lie, guilty pleasure. Bring it on. I own it on DVD.
Okay, it didn't quite make it for me. I gave it a C+ on Now Playing. But
don't ask me why, because it's a terrible movie. It's really not very good. But there's this, like, there's just something about Kirsten Dunst and how cheery and just, she's the embodiment.
Just her in a cheerleading outfit.
Well, yeah,
probably
maybe
didn't hurt.
Partly that, and Elijah Dushku as well. But I mean, yeah, right. There's something about it. But okay, Peyton Reed, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, that was a little different at the time it came out. I mean, ever since then, you kind of get the copies of that blueprint that they try to, you know, duplicate, and it hasn't succeeded. And then he did, and it was completely failed at the box office. But I liked it. It was kind of a throwback film. It was called Down with Love. It was a romantic comedy with Renee Zellweger and Ewan McGregor.
I do remember that.
And it was kind of a throwback to the 50s. Mm-hmm. It was, I think it was set in the 50s, actually. Or at least it had that feel.
Okay.
But it kind of had a, although it had a 50s style, it had a 2000 or late 90s sense of humor. So I thought that mix was kind of unique, and it was funny, and I thought it worked. And he just kind of has a unique sensibility, mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that translates to doing something a little different comic-wise.
So has he done a lot, or those are the only two things has he done other projects that have not panned out? Or?
Yeah, he's done some other things that, to be honest, I can't recall off the top of my head, but they didn't. They didn't translate so well, but I'm optimistic about Ant-Man.
I'm interested to see that one. I'm excited for it, and I still haven't seen it. I have friends that are dogging me left and right, Mad Max Fury Road. Okay. Because I like Mad Max, I like The Road Warrior. This has forced me to rewatch Thunderdome, because I will say, I saw Thunderdome when I was like 10, and hated it.
And really, see, that's the age you should have watched it and probably loved it. I haven't seen, I never saw Beyond Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, but I would think as a 10-year-old boy, that's something you should really dig.
I hated it. It's forced me to rewatch it these last couple weeks, because, I mean, they're all on. All three of those are on AMC or Spike or whatnot. Beyond Thunderdome actually is just a different take on that character. It's more cerebral. There's not much action, and I think that as a kid, that's why I didn't like it. Because, you know, Mad Max is, there's story and then there's action. Road Warrior is nothing but action, action, action. And I think as a young kid, I probably did not comprehend the nuances of the plot that was unfolding in Thunderdome. I still don't like it as much as the other two, even as an adult. But I have more respect for it. I'm not going to sit here and rant and rave about it like I used to.
The only one I had seen before the new reboot or whatever, Mad Max with Tom Hardy, was the original Mad Max. And the only reason I saw it is because we did it as a video pick for Now Playing.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty good, but I didn't see The Road Warrior or Beyond Thunderdome. I guess I just had visions in my head that Beyond Thunderdome was this big action spectacle upon my memory... you know, it's real. The art direction is really kind of off the charts compared to Mad Max and Road Warrior. You had Tina Turner in there, and I really thought it was more of a souped-up action picture.
No, there's not a lot of action in it. That's the thing. That's the curveball to it. And like I said, I think now that I rewatched it, it's a good movie. It's not as good as the other two, but I'm excited for the new one, because I've heard some very good things about it. So
It's a visual feast. I mean, if you just want to see a film that literally looks cool,
I've heard that.
Yeah, Fury Road is what you want to see.
Okay,
and it's the first act, and I call it the first action scene. It essentially, is like 35 minutes long, at least a half an hour. it clicks and it's off and it's running for about 35 minutes. It's one nonstop chase scene of them.
Awesome.
Hunting down Mad Max and then kind of using him as I can't think of a hood ornament.
Okay.
He's a hood ornament on one of the vehicles in the big desert scene, so.
All right, so those are the ones, and then the other one, because believe it or not, as a young man, a teenager in the 90s, I loved me some old school hip hop, so I'm excited for the biopic of N.W.A.
All right, I'm
looking
forward to
Compton. I'm excited for that one. August 21st can't get here soon enough. I want to see it. No, I might be the only white dude in the theater, but I want to go see it.
No, I think it's going to translate. I think it'll translate race, because N.W.A. and of course, you know, the Dre and Cube have obviously their image is much more adult now, and it's been toned down. Well, Cube's in kid films now, so
he is.
I think it's going to translate. I think it'll translate the races. If nothing else, NWA, sure. You know, although their, their music was straight out of Compton.
Sure.
The sound and the music itself was great, and it translated, races and
it
socioeconomics and everything. You know, I think the film will too.
Yeah, and I saw Ice Cube 2 years ago because there was a tour that came out. It was Public Enemy, De La Soul, LL Cool J, and Ice Cube.
Okay.
I went to Cleveland to go see it, and of those four, I was like, well, I don't know, because I'm like, is Ice Cube going to be any good? Because just what you said, he's in kids' films. That dude still got it. He came out and did an absolutely blistering set and really blew me away. I was like, wow, he does still have it. I guess, my bad. He does still have it.
And at least acting-wise, you still see a little bit of an edge in some of the 21 Jump Street films.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So it's good to hear that he still has it on stage, too.
Oh, yeah, he does. Side note, disappointing was LL Cool J.
Really?
Yeah, because he wanted to do some new tracks. I'm like, no, time out. I'm not here to hear new stuff. I want to hear I Need Love. I want to hear Radio. I want to hear Mama Said Knock You Out.
Right, did he do Going Back to Cali at least?
Yeah, he did Going Back to Cali.
He didn't do Mama Said Knock You Out?
No, he did, like, no, don't play new stuff.
You want that,
Yeah.
Well, I think most people that are going to a concert like that want to hear essentially the greatest hits, yeah.
Right, I was like, don't. No, not new stuff, LL. Come on, man. I'll tell you one that I am not excited for, and I don't even understand why they rebooted it. Well, I think I understand, money-wise, Fantastic Four. To me, that looks like a train wreck.
I guess I'm a little more optimistic after watching the trailer. I could see your pessimism, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Based on the... I think there were two other Fantastic Fours. Yeah, there were two other Four films, so...
I did not mind the first one. I thought it was okay. The second one was not very good.
I don't really remember much about them, to be honest.
I mean, they're just... I think, too, that the problem is, like, as a kid, I never much cared for the Fantastic Four as comic book characters. So that's where they already have a bias against them. But I thought the first movie was okay. I mean, it was like, I always rate it to, it's like Punisher with Thomas Jane. It's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. It's okay.
I'm not sure. We did one Punisher for now playing. I don't recall.
Was it that one or Warzone? Punisher Warzone.
Whichever the first one was.
Thomas Jane one, yeah.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was okay. It was acceptable, yeah.
Yeah, I heard Warzone is nothing more than a complete bloodbath. Because
yeah, I know, this next one's... The new one's rough, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've never seen it either. But yeah, I heard it's nothing more than just machine guns and blood.
Which, my understanding, is more in touch with the comic book origin, isn't it?
It was. The thing that I liked most about the Thomas Jane one was it was more based on the storyline that they had done a couple years ago in the comics. So it was a little more towards the comic book source material, which I liked more because I liked the guy that wrote it. Garth Ennis is a comic book hero of mine. So I liked it better. I liked it. I think probably gave it more credence than...
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, I think probably the knock on the original, and I didn't have a problem with the spirit, more the execution of the original Fantastic Four that came out
years ago
is that they were more of kind of, for lack of a better term, lighthearted as opposed to kind of the more edgy fare that was coming out as far as the Batman films at the time with Batman Begins and then The Dark Knight and then Dark Knight Rises. Those were darker, more serious comic book fare where... The other Fantastic Four films, they were, kind of, for lack of a better term, easygoing or light.
Right. Yeah, most definitely. I agree with that. I'm trying to see what else. Well, I mean, Terminator Genesis is coming on out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, to be honest. I think I'm optimistic about it, and partially because I think it's a throwback to the other Terminator films, and you can just forget, I don't even remember what it's called, the one with Christian Bale.
Salvation.
Yes, that... Yeah. That one I thought was bad.
I thought Rise of the Machines with Claire Danes was the worst one.
Really? Yeah, I enjoyed it.
That one was rough. I thought Salvation was but I don't know. I'm really...
Arnold's back. Doesn't that give you some some optimism?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Not too much, but just a little bit. I don't know.
I should have checked to see who's on board as the director. I mean, the first two were James Cameron.
Right.
So
the bar set very, very high.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. There's what about some of the other ones that have come out? Like, you know, in the last couple of weeks, we have San Andreas, you know.
I actually gave it a pass. I gave it a B-. Okay. I know, again, it kind of mixed critically, but I think it delivers on kind of this big spectacle event type atmosphere where, I mean, there is just utter chaos and destruction in this picture. And if you don't mind, if you like watching toppling buildings, and they set them, the landscape for some of these pictures, it's San Francisco. So they actually use, unlike some of the other disaster films, like, I can't remember what it's called, Day After Tomorrow, or Day After Tomorrow, where you kind of see the Statue of Liberty falling, or it's under sea. It's more of kind of backdrop. You know, as far as the action. Here they actually use some of the areas like PNC Park and the Golden Gate Bridge and Hoover Dam. That's part of the action.
Okay.
Like it's not just like, hey, look at it in the background. Like, stuff's occurring in it, and I think they do a good job incorporating that into the action in San Andreas.
I will confess, I'm not a big disaster film fan, like, to me.
Most times they're not very good, to be honest.
Yeah, they're not, and I'm like, but...
And this isn't great, but I think it's passable. I mean, again, the mass carnage is...
Rock's got to have some good lines. He's got to have some snappy...
You would think so, but to be honest, it's kind of disappointing
really?
That they don't utilize The Rock for what you want The Rock
really?
For. Yeah.
Oh.
They could have picked anybody, to be honest. I mean, he's a likable guy, and he comes off as a likable guy.
Right,
but
yeah.
Why do you want to go see The Rock?
I want to see The Rock spout off... cool lines and kick butt,
and maybe raise the eyebrow at least a half a dozen times, right?
Yeah, at least.
No, he doesn't worry. I don't think he raises the eyebrow once.
Oh man, I'm disappointed by that.
Well, part of it is, I mean, there is mass death and destruction going on in the picture.
True.
So I'm not.
You didn't expect him to go, do you smell la 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 what The Rock is cooking?
Exactly. Yeah, you know.
While buildings falling into the ocean.
Yeah, maybe they could have thrown in like a dramatic eyebrow lift, but you know, I don't think it would have translated his humor would have translated as well in this picture.
No. What about Entourage?
You know, we didn't do that for the show. I didn't see it. I didn't see the TV show at all.
Yeah,
so I had no background going in to watch that. And to be honest, Mark Piper, my co-host for Now Playing, told me it was essentially the male version of Sex and the City, which completely turned me off.
One that kind of flopped, Tomorrowland.
I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you think it flopped?
I think I know why it flopped.
Okay.
Because it had the spirit, it had the kid's spirit,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't translate well for adults, and... The story that it was telling and the kind of concept that it was going over translates more for adults and not kids. So you have the spirit and kind of the lightheartedness of a children's picture, which I don't think translates well for the adults, and it has kind of this high concept. It's essentially hard to describe the plot. My wife Andrea asked me, what's it about? And I'm like, I'm not really sure. Even going into it.
Yeah, right.
So I think if you can't sell what the film is going into it, it's going to be hard to translate to the box office and hard to sell for anybody.
Because I took from the advertisements, it's about a girl that goes back in time to fix things that went wrong. Am I incorrect? I mean, I did not see the movie.
You are incorrect. It's actually about it translating the future.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, figuring out the clues and figuring out what would happen in the future? Wow, this has really gotten very, very deep and philosophical.
Yeah.
People are turning off right now. No, I'm just kidding.
It's set in the present, and I recommend the film. So I think, it's pretty interesting.
Okay.
And again, I kind of like the, for lack of a better term, the 80s or Disney spirit that kind of shines through in it. It's set in the modern times. They're essentially the NASA space program is going under. They're not funding it, and I know there's some lack of funding going on in it right now.
Yeah. Hint, hint, wink, wink. In the picture.
Yeah. But things look grim for the present. So they're gravitating some of mankind, the select chosen ones, and going to this Tomorrowland destination.
Okay.
Because they see a lot of, you know, the news is, you know, showing disasters and war and grim, and it's more about how can we translate the present towards a bright future in our minds and in our optimism, as opposed to, you know, having a kind of a pessimistic nature.
So where does the girl fit in? Because it does center around the main character as a young girl, right? Correct?
Yeah, well, she's a teenager, although she looks like she's about 25, so it kind of has a Beverly Hills 90210 thing going on with, you know, how they look and how old they're supposed to be.
Okay.
She's real sharp. Her father, I can't remember if he, I think he currently holds a position with NASA, but he used to be higher up, I think, with NASA. But she's the one that's, she's kind of a vigilante towards, they're trying to restructure or not take down NASA, but again, they've kind of defunded it, mm-hmm. and she's trying to topple their toppling of NASA.
Okay.
So they see this kind of bright, you know, innovative, free spirit, and they give her this coin or lapel. It's more of a, it's a pin,
mm-hmm.
and not a coin. It's a pin that when she touches, it transports her mentally to Tomorrowland.
Okay. Wow, that's really complex.
But a Tomorrowland does actually exist.
Oh,
so there's a lot of things. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on.
That's not how it's pitched in the advertisements, really.
No,
at least the way that I comprehended it.
It's hard to. I mean, it's a hard sell for a 2-minute trailer.
I can see why it didn't do well at the box office. So,
and I took my 8-year-old daughter Grace to see it. Mm-hmm. She was kind of bored with it again because it's really high concept. It's something more that either older kids or adults are going to be able to pick up on. But then it kind of has this real lighthearted, you know, 80s Disney spirit. You know, that kids would appreciate, but adults might think they're too.
Okay.
They're beyond.
They're beyond.
Good thing I'm like a 12-year-old at heart, so. Yeah. You know.
I will share here that two other films I've recently seen. I'm going to put a little footnote to them. Because I would like to talk a little bit more about one. But the Capital Summer Movie Series down at the Ohio Theater.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of. I every year try to go, and they show Jaws on the big screen, which I have never seen on the big screen. Because
so you saw it for the first time.
I've seen it for the first time on the big screen.
Okay,
I always saw it on TV, on cable, or on VHS or whatnot. So it was really cool to see it on the big screen. I really liked it. And they admitted that it is an actual new 35mm print. It is not digital because the anniversary is coming out. And I guess in selected theaters, they're going to have Jaws out, I guess, to celebrate its anniversary this year. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was a blast to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, and to me, you're not really seeing Jaws if you're not seeing something like that on the big screen.
Right.
I saw it like you did. For the first time, I saw it on... I'm dating myself. I saw it on video.
Yeah,
on VHS. And then I went and saw it for the first time on the big screen. I think it's still around and kicking. It's the Strand Theater in Delaware.
Oh, really?
And I saw it. They had in their balcony area or whatever, their second level. And it was pretty impressive.
It was good. It was very good. So I liked that. The other film that I watched, straight to Netflix, which I wanted to talk a little bit and get your thoughts about the way in which movies now are being distributed. Because I think with our technology now, do you think it's easier to get films out to the public? I'll let you think about that for a minute. I was going to share. I saw The Sheik, which is the Iron Sheik documentary, which, being the wrestling nerd that I am, I liked it. I thought it was very well done. It was very interesting to see... his life in Iran, and, you know, as a child, as a young adult, and then coming over to America, and then see some of the problems. I mean, the guy's had some issues.
Right, yeah.
And see how those worked out for him. So I liked it a lot, but that was a documentary that went straight to iTunes, straight to Netflix. So what's your thoughts on this new, you know, streaming service and the way in which films are now distributed?
I think it's great. Okay. One, because it gets... When would you have been able to see The Sheik?
Never. Yeah, I mean, right.
So it gave you the ability to see it, and everyone the ability to see it,
sure.
You know, by making it streaming on Netflix, or I don't know if it was on demand, you know, through cable providers, but that's another way that I just saw a Good Kill, which it only showed here for, I think, maybe a week or two, mm-hmm. in limited release at the Gateway mm-hmm. Film Center. I didn't get a chance to get out and see it. I was able to see it on demand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, the fact that... one, it's cheaper to make movies these days because with the digital format, you know, we're able to do a podcast.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, and, remotely, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so I think it's great that there are so many different options to see, you know, films. I still think, of course, that it's best to see it in a theatrical presentation because I like that isolation and feeling like you're overwhelmed by the drama or the humor or the horror or the action or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it's tough sometimes for that to translate
in your house.
Yeah, yeah, even, right. Even though the home theater systems and you know HD screens and large screens are getting closer to that presentation that you'll get in the theater, it's still not the same.
Right.
But something like The Sheik is something I think that you can appreciate, maybe not quite as much as seeing it in the theater, but still, I mean, documentaries, you know, kind of have more of a personal feel.
Right.
And, you know, if you're watching that at home, I think it translates pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. And I think you and I agree on many of those points because I think, too, yeah, it's a great way to get films out there that may not have a lot of money behind them and ultimately just have your voice heard.
Yes.
You know, if you're a filmmaker, that's what you're doing. These are my thoughts on this topic or what I feel about these topics, and boom, you make a film about it. So I think it's a good idea.
I will say, much like the internet or blogs or whatever, I think it's good that we have the capability to pump out a mass amount of information or movies or whatnot, but a lot of times it's tough to decipher, you know, what's good, what's bad, what shouldn't I see, what's worth my time. It gets a little more difficult when there's, you know, a mass amount of movies.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I just took some notes on things that are coming out that I'm like, wow, there's a lot that I want to go see, you know, at various different levels. Some of them, obviously, independent films that are probably going to get, like you said, a week at the gateway. And if I don't see them then, I got to wait till they come to VOD or, you know, Netflix or whatnot. I agree with you that there seems to be an awful lot. And sometimes it is overwhelming.
Yeah, there's probably anywhere from half a dozen to a dozen films that come out to Columbus each week.
Yep.
And to figure out, you know, what's worth seeing and what's not worth seeing, it can be, you know, it's tough to do.
Yeah, sure.
That's why you got to listen to the critics.
Yeah.
Sometimes, at least.
You're trying to keep yourself employed, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Job security. Yeah. Well, let's talk about what some of your, because you mentioned one of your favorite films. What, you got a few favorites, all-time favorites? We'll swap lifts.
Actually, if I can make a pitch, I'm not sure where it's showing or if it's still showing, but if it's not, you can, of course, see it when it comes out on DVD or Redbox or on demand, is a film called Ex Machina that opened at a few select theaters around town.
Sure, yeah. I would like to see it. I have not caught it yet.
Yeah, I would say that, or I'm struggling between that and Inside Out as to what I would say is so far the best movie I've seen so far this year.
Okay.
But they're both, I mean, Inside Out obviously is for a younger crowd to a certain extent.
Ex Machina looks kind of a little bit crazy, if you will.
But they're both really sharp and imaginative and very ambitious pictures about what they're doing. I mean, they're both really getting inside the heads of individuals. Ex Machina, do you roughly know what it's about?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and because it's about artificial intelligence, a gentleman that creates kind of his own AI. Yeah.
Yes.
And then how it kind of runs amok a little bit.
Yes, a computer programmer wins a lottery for the company that he's working for. It's essentially like the Google. It's a fictional Google. And he wins a chance to spend a week with the, for lack of a better term, because I can't remember the name of the company, the film, Google's owner, for a week. He gets to go out to his private resort.
No.
And he says, you know, hey, we can hang out here for a week, you know, and it's this real cool, you know, underground, part of it I think is underground lair. Or I can let you in on my test subject, as you mentioned, the AI being, and of course it's a attractive
young lady.
Robot, yes.
Yes. Lady
in parentheses, yeah. So it's about the relationship that this programmer has with the robot, or AI, whatever you want to call it. I don't want to get too far into it, but she's confined, and she doesn't want to stay confined. So,
it goes from there. Yeah. All right.
You start really questioning the motivations and the intelligence of everyone concerned, and you know, how is this going to play out? And it's a real sharp film about, you know, what we view as reality versus you know,
what it actually is.
What it actually is, yeah, and yeah, you know, where do we go from here?
That's cool. So what about overall favorites of all time? Because you mentioned Up as a favorite of yours.
Yeah, to be honest, and it may sound silly because it's so current and because it's an animated picture.
Sure.
Yeah. But I would put Up, I mean, it's probably, you know, my top 20 of all time. I really like Up. I like kind of the inspirational pictures.
Okay.
And they're all from different generations, but... Field of Dreams would be up there.
Okay.
The Shawshank Redemption, which is almost everyone's favorite.
Yeah.
And It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
Are probably three of mine. I love Casablanca, too.
That's very good. That's one that I saw for the first time ever at Kappa.
Okay,
A couple of years ago they had it on. And the thing that surprised me most about Casablanca is, I'll admit, the sharp dialogue. I mean, it's very sharp and witty and to the point and enjoyable. Absolutely enjoyable. I really dug Casablanca. It was very well. I mean, it is one of the greats of all greats, and I can see why. It was good.
Yeah, and it's also a great looking picture.
Sure.
It was before, obviously, they were able to, but it wasn't quite popular enough. Is color pictures.
Color pictures. Yeah.
So the black and white, you know, the cinematography really sticks out in it, and it's. I mean, it's really. It's only set at one place. It's set at Rick's Bar, but it's amazing, you know, the emotions and the, you know, transcendent themes that ring out in Casablanca still stand true today.
Yeah. I think that on my list, my favorites, I'm a huge fan of Memento. I mean, it's just a really, it was just a fascinating film and uniquely done, and I really fell in love with that film the first time I saw it at the Drexel.
What's cool about Memento is you're essentially placed in the same restrictions that Leonard is.
Yeah.
Where your short-term memory is tested because you have to constantly refer back to the scene before that, the scene before that, since it's told from the end to the beginning.
Yeah, that's a favorite of mine. I love Why We Fight, which is a documentary by Eugene Jarecki about our paramilitary industrial complex. It's very well done. It follows why do we get involved in conflicts. Well, we get involved in conflicts because Lockheed Martin is saying, hey, we can sell all these planes to the U.S. government. And it's really interesting. It's a very good documentary. It's a favorite of mine. I watch it over and over and over again and still pick out like new things that I didn't get. So for me, for a documentary, I think that's, you know, like that's pinnacle. I love the film Black Dynamite.
I don't think I've seen Black Dynamite.
Oh man, Black Dynamite! You got to see it. It's good. I mean, it's very tongue in cheek about that whole blaxploitation films. Funny though, I still laugh to this day. I've seen it probably 20 times, but I still love Black Dynamite.
Is that from back in the?
No, it was made in 2009. Michael Jai White made it. And it pokes
trying to
fun
figure
of
out why I'm trying to I'm trying to see why I haven't seen
Black Tommy Dynamite. Davidson guest stars in it. Okay. Arsenio Hall, Cedric Yarborough is in it. Kim Whitley is in it. It's a great flick. It's again very tongue in cheek about that whole blaxploitation genre of films, which most of those were pretty bad, you know.
Yeah, I've only seen a couple of them. Again, that's
okay.
I would really date myself if I'd actually seen some of the originals in the theater. But no, I'm not that old. Those came out
in the mid seventies.
Yeah,
I think a favorite of mine too is I love the original Star Wars trilogy.
Okay,
I mean, you know, the newer ones, you know.
Yeah, I like the Star Wars the first. I like episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Right.
5, Empire Strikes Back, to me
is
by far the best.
Yes.
I don't think it's even really close.
Yeah. No,
even the original, I think it's better than the original.
Yes, I agree. But I am excited for the new one to come out in December because I think that it looks very promising. It doesn't look... I always complain that the you know, episodes 1, 2, and 3, heavily CGI'd. And you know... I wanted to go back to a little more of the models and a little more of the puppetry in that, and because that's what I grew up on, you know.
I don't even know. I'll plead ignorance. I don't know. Is episode 7 going to go back to more of that, or is it
going
to stick
with
the CGI?
I understand, yeah, there have been some things that they're doing a little more model-like and whatnot, supposedly. So.
I guess that shouldn't surprise me. Typically, I wouldn't be excited for Episode 7. I like the Star Wars films, sure. but I'm not nutso about them.
Sure.
And especially coming off 1, 2, and 3, which, 1, I didn't think was very good. 2 and 3, I'd give a pass, but again, they're still not up to Star Wars caliber. But since J.J. Abrams is directing Episode yes. 7, I'm all on board.
Did you like his reboot of Star Trek?
I did. I thought they were good.
I thought the first one was good. Second one was a little iffy because it just kind of seemed like
The first,
like you said about Avengers, we just rolled from one incident to another incident to another incident.
Yeah, the first one was good. First one was good. Second one, you're right. It was all right. But I'm a huge Abrams fan due to his work with Lost.
Yeah, I was gonna say you got to be a Lost fan if you like J.J. Abrams that much. Yeah.
Yes, I'm yeah. Actually, that's what made me a huge Abrams fan, and actually, I started watching Fringe after.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because he was involved in that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is there any films that you absolutely can't stand? I mean, for whatever reason.
Actually,
like, in the whole history, I mean, you know, that doesn't have to be from this year.
I'm not a big fan of Freddy Got Fingered. Sticking with alliteration, Freddy Got Fingered, 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, that was awful. I went to it, my girlfriend wanted to see it, and I said, okay,
did she read the books?
She read the books, and she goes, this is probably not going to be good. She goes, the books were not very good. I'm like, okay.
Then why did she continue to read them?
It's just to see how they ended, I guess. Okay. And so I went out of curiosity because I'm like, I want to see what this is all about. Oh, you know you're in trouble when your own target audience can't take the material seriously. Like, there was nothing but middle-aged, white, 40-year-old housewives in that theater, and the dialogue they were laughing at. I'm like, this is supposed to be your cup of tea, though. Yeah, it was bad, yeah.
Yeah, my problem is that there will be some people that will take it seriously.
Oh.
Because as a father of two young girls, this is poison to women's souls.
Sure.
I mean, essentially you're accepting this stalking, psychotic, at best mentally abusive individual. He's made acceptable because he's rich and he's good looking.
Sure. I'm with you on that one.
In any other film, this kid, Christian Grey, is a bad guy. He's
right.
the enemy in
he
the
is
picture.
The bad guy. Exactly.
You know, this is the type of, you know, this is like a stalker thriller type guy, not a, you know, psycho erotic, you know, romance or whatever it's supposed to be.
I will go on record as saying some of my least favorite, Mulholland Drive. Everybody loved that movie, and I did not.
I'm on the other side of the aisle from you on that.
Really? You liked it a lot?
I'm not that far on the other side of the aisle, but I enjoyed it, yeah.
I just didn't. It was beautiful. Cinematography was beautiful, but I was like, I don't understand what I just watched. But that's David Lynch.
Well,
to a
certain extent, I'm not sure that you're supposed to.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody says. They go, John, you went to see David Lynch. Nothing he does makes sense. And I'm like, you're right, but I just...
Enough of it's supposed to make sense that you can kind of theorize about what's going on.
Yeah.
But to actually piece it all together.
Yeah. My other one that I hate, G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Because I was a G.I. Joe kid. Like, I'm a G.I. Joe fanatic. And, like, it was awful. It was just terrible. I have not even seen Retaliation. I refuse to.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if I've... I don't think... No, we didn't do the latest Joe. There were two Joes before that, though, right?
No, I think Retaliation was it. Okay. There was only those two.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of underwhelmed by the...
Rise of Cobra?
Yes, yeah, the Rise of Cobra.
I was so mad.
To me, it wasn't cartoonish enough. I mean, that's what it's based on. And I don't really remember...
Well,
I don't really remember some of my favorite characters. Not, it's been a long time since I saw the G.I. Joe cartoon. But I grew up during the 80s. That's when
that
stuff was popular. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just I just felt like I understand that when you take a beloved product like that you have to make changes so that the masses like it. I understand that, but I felt like they went so far away from the source material that it was just like you alienate. I was the guy in the G.I. Joe T-shirt. And the theater that night.
Right.
So you've alienated me and all the other thousands of people that were like that. And so I just felt like, okay. Yeah. So it's on my list of I hate. I think another one too, which may get controversy, was I was never a big fan of Vulgar, which is a very unknown underground movie that Brian Johnson, who is Kevin Smith's high school buddy, made. Oh, it was terrible. It was really bad.
I'm going to lose some credibility here on the movie side, but I haven't even heard of Vulgar.
It got an F in Entertainment Weekly. It was really bad. and it is that bad. It's not very good. It's about a clown, a guy that's a clown. Brian O'Halloran is in it, and he plays a guy that's like a clown that you hire for your kids' parties.
Okay.
And he decides to... Basically... He decides to come up with this idea that he would be like a cross-dressing clown that you could hire for bachelor parties before the actual stripper comes out. Like, it would be a gag. Like,
okay.
Oh, let's pull a gag on our friend, right? Uh-huh. Just by that theory itself, you're like, this doesn't make any sense. This is not going to go well. And it doesn't, because like a bunch of inbred hillbillies hire him and then they kind of sexually assault him. And then the rest of the movie
kind of sexually assault him.
There are two young children upstairs, so yes, they do. They actually sexually assault him. Right. So, and then he just basically becomes a hero because he saves a bunch of people. It's a mess of a movie, just awful. And at the point that it came out, I was a big Kevin Smith fan. However, recent years, I don't think Kevin Smith has put out a very good movie.
No, I'm trying to remember the last one that
Zack and Miri Make a Porno was not very good.
No.
Red State was awful. Red State was terrible.
Didn't even see it.
I've never seen Tusk, but I've heard nothing but terrible things about it.
Yeah, I don't think that way. We didn't do it. I mean, he's the sad thing is, you're talking about a guy that kind of, he didn't put independent film on the map, but he magnified the importance of independent film with Clerks and kind of set off his own career. I think he peaked with Chasing Amy.
Yes.
I think that was his best film. And then it was all downhill from here. He kind of resorted back to the same stuff he did with Clerks, just to a lesser degree.
I liked Dogma. I thought that was a good...
Yeah.
That was a good social commentary on...
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
On religion. But yeah, then he just went back to recycling the same stuff. And I like Kevin Smith still. Like, I'll listen to his podcasts. I think he's funny. I think he has some good points, but I don't think he's made a very good film in a while. And this came out like right. I think this came out maybe before, right after Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. This is when Vulgar came out. I think right before Clerks 2 in that time frame, and it was awful. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I think it's just sad that somebody that talented has kind of become irrelevant. Cinematically,
yeah, sure.
At least. I mean,
sure.
I'm sure he has his hardcore followers,
sure.
That. You know, we'll go to bat for him and see whatever he puts out. But I mean, this guy had made some of the more important independent films of the time.
Yeah,
and now he's making things that are going
nowhere.
Yeah, they're
nowhere.
Not. Well, they're going on demand.
Right. Exactly. All right. So we're getting up to about 50 minutes. So maybe we'll start wrapping some things up here. Is there anything you'd like to plug, Paul? Anything at all? I mean, Now Showing is still on the air.
Well, first of all, I'd like to plug the actual title of it. It's Now Playing.
Now Playing. What did I say?
He said Now Showing.
Oh, Now Playing.
Now Showing. Now Playing. If you're in Westerville and you're listening to this podcast,
John. You can... I said Now Showing. Really? I did say that?
You said Now Showing, yeah. That's all right.
Damn.
It's Now Playing. It's
Now Playing.
Same principle, at least. But yeah, we show in Westerville, and we used to stream live online, but I'm not sure if we're still doing that or not.
So it is. If you're in the Westerville area and you get Audubon's television station, you can watch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you get Channel 3 in the Westerville area, or
Channel
around
3.
East and even, I guess, we'll spew out into the Easton area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easton
Gannon Now area. Playing.
Now Playing. Yes.
Jeez.
We're still on there.
You know, that's the worst thing that's gone wrong on this podcast. I'm actually doing very well.
No. I think you've done a terrific job. You kept the conversation flowing.
Anyways, so anything else? Any other social media stuff or anything else you want to plug? Or not really?
No, once the kids came out, the Paul Markoff Film Reviews.blogspot.com went on. It's been on hiatus now for about
2 years, 3 years.
2 years, but if you want to see some good video pics, you can always go to that.
There you go. Okay,
and,
so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So
I pumped the last season of Lost on there too. I think that might have been my actual last blog post was. Lost season 6, which is now officially just over 5 years old.
Well, wait, was there only 6 seasons or 7?
6 seasons
six.
Of Lost, yeah.
Okay,
but that
Lost.
That
okay.
ended 5 years ago, so that tells you. Well, I Haven't posted anything probably in 5 years, actually. If you're looking for video pics, go there, though.
There you go. Well, there you go. A little information.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sure.
Maybe people just have to drive up to Westerville.
Yeah, there you go.
And there you go. Maybe you should do a live now playing. Have you ever thought about that?
Oh, you mean like on location somewhere?
Yeah.
Like outside the studio?
Yeah.
I think we considered at one point in time, but
did you?
Yeah, it never went down.
Okay.
I think it would be hard, you know.
Did the higher ups go, what? What are you guys?
No, it just, it's not impossible, but yeah, I think you'd lose a lot. You'd have to take all the equipment out of the controller.
Right, I know, and then put them in the van.
Or at least, jump in the remote truck,
right,
and off you go.
What the listeners don't know is I know quite well what went on in that station. I spent many, as it
That's
told you
right.
off air.
Yeah.
Adam Michaels and myself spent many a time editing audition tapes up there, if you will. So we're quite aware.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, Paul, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll maybe have to do this again soon.
Oh, I'd like to, yeah. It was
all right,
a lot of
excellent,
fun.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to wrap things up. So I'm going to go to a quick break, and then I'll end this episode. So stick around.
Big Fun Columbus. What is that, you ask? It's simply the greatest toy store on the face of the planet. And it's right here in Columbus, Ohio. Shimmy on down to 672 North High Street in the Short North. And you can check out all of the various different toys that they have. If you listen to my previous episode of the PBD Cast, where I, John Orlando, did a complete entire episode from the store, you know that they got everything you could imagine. You need wrestling figures? They got them. You need McFarlane toys? They got them. He-Man? You got it. G.I. Joe? You got it. Star Wars? Legos? Whatever you need, whatever you collect, they got it at Big Fun. And guess what? If they don't have something, they got a wish list. You put it on there, they'll try to get it for you. Man, oh man, you got to go visit the guys and the girls down at Big Fun Columbus. Once again, they're at 672 North High Street in the Short North. You can check them out on Twitter at Big Fun Columbus, or simply go to Facebook, facebook.com/Big Fun Columbus. Check it out. Get down there for everything that you need in terms of collecting, or hell, if you just want to go down and relive your childhood like I did, stop on down to Big Fun Columbus and check it out.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my discussion with Paul Markov, and I'm still laughing over the fact that I said now showing instead of now playing. I mean, well, Paul's a really good dude. I thoroughly enjoyed sitting down and talking with him about movies, and, you know, overall, just it was a fun podcast. It went like that. I didn't even realize that 50 minutes had gone past, but definitely, I hope you enjoyed it too, and let me know if you liked it or not. You can do that a couple different ways, so let's go ahead and do it real quick. First way you can get in touch with me is shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can look for me on Twitter at PVDMVP. Also, Instagram as well is the same, PVDMVP, so let me know what you thought about this episode and whatnot. So with that, let's get into Orlando's Fave! That's right, it's the fave for this episode. My favorite thing, something cool that I'd like to tell you about. And with that, we're sticking with movies. Because, ladies and gentlemen, every summer, I thoroughly enjoy the Kappa Summer Movie Series. And in fact, that's my fave for this week. I went down, I think last week, yeah, and caught Jaws on the big screen. I've never seen Jaws on the big screen. I've always seen it, you know, on VHS or DVD or on cable. And the opportunity to go down and see it on the big screen, which many of you around the country will get an opportunity to see it. From what I understand, they're releasing it, since it's the 40th anniversary of the movie, in selected cities. Man, it was cool to see it on the big screen. And that's just one of the many, many, many movies that they have on tap throughout June, July, and August. Go over to their website. I don't know what it is offhand. Just Google Kappa, C-A-P-A, Summer Movie Series 2015. I mean, there's a whole truckload of movies coming up. Definitely, if you're a movie buff like I am, it's $4 to go downtown Columbus, catch an awesome film down there, at the Ohio Theater, and the Ohio Theater is breathtaking. in terms of its architecture and its beauty. So that's my fave, ladies and gentlemen. So with that, I'm going to start wrapping things up. So with that, I already said that, didn't I? Anyways, I'm going to wrap things up again, repeating myself multiple times here. That's weird. Anyways, I'm rambling, so let's close up shop. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, folks.